enjoy another round of race and rock with Dragnus.com. Staging in the left lane is your host, founder and creator of the Dragnus, Bill Pratt. And in the right lane, John, the Wildcat One. You're going to hear news and interviews from the world of drag racing, both now and then. So get yourself situated, pull your belts tight, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready for some race and rock.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to Racing and Rockin' with Draglist.com, produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. I'm Bill Pratt. It's great to be with you tonight because tonight we feature drag racing writer and racer Bob Buechler. I'm going to ask some racing questions, and John's going to ask some rockin' questions, and I think we're going to get some rockin' answers tonight. You can join our live chat during the show at racersreunion.com. Also, we're live broadcasting on Facebook at the Draglist.com Facebook fan page, so go check us out there. Without further ado, Bob Buechler, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
So great. So great to have you on. Not only a racer, but a writer and a great-looking website, Drag Time News, with tons and tons of coverage for sportsmen racers in the Northeast. Tell us a little bit about that site.
So, thanks for bringing that up. And before that, let me just say it's a real honor to be here because I'm in good company being on your show. My friend Rich Hanna has been on your show. My friend Doug Dahl was on your show, and you feature not just pros. I know you've had Terry McMillan and Tanner Gray, but Jimmy DeFrank, you know, sportsman racers, and here I am. I get to talk about my love, which is bracket racing. So it's a really neat venue that you give us to talk about the full sort of breadth of the drag racing environment, not just pros, but even, you know, even bracket racers like me. So and that kind of segues into the Drag Time News. So I saw that a few years ago, I think it was early 2000s, I saw that there was a lack of sort of coverage of local racing events, meaning, you know, these tracks were putting on special events, and they're trying to get cars, and drag strips that don't get cars, they don't stay drag strips for very long. So, right. You know, they'd put a lot of effort into having, for example, a Mopar race or a nostalgia race, but these events would be kind of flying under the radar of maybe National Dragster or any of the larger media outlets. So I thought, well, there might be a need to help these tracks promote these events and try to get some cars to these events. So I came up with the Drag Time News in 2002. It was a paper. It was an actual paper. And I sold the ads. I did the layout, the design. I did everything, secured the distribution on the Drag Time News. And it became such a bear of a job that I published it for 2 years. And at that point, I just couldn't do it by myself anymore. Yeah. So racers would continually come up to me in the staging lanes for years and years after that, saying, man, we love the newspaper. When is it coming back? So I thought, well, I've already done a paper, so let's do something online. So the Drag Time News that you see came out February 2009, and now I have a lot of people coming up to me saying, you know, I'm on your site. I really like what you do to try to promote sportsman racers and sort of the technical aspects that go into building a bracket car, which is very different than building a heads up drag car. It's all about consistency and making sure it doesn't break, things like that, and even towing articles. I have articles on the website about safe towing practices and things like that. So it's really out of a love of bracket racing and the people who I see on a week in and week out basis, who are so committed and so devoted to this sport with really zero fanfare. So I try to give them some fanfare, you know, just like you guys do. You had Doug Dahl on; he's a sportsman racer, and so you and I we're kind of doing the same thing. We're celebrating our sport at all levels. When I have my event coverage, I will feature guys like John Force because people love or hate John Force, which is just good. That's just good for me either way.
Right, sure.
Right, but the focus is let's photograph the early rounds because half of those racers, they're going home.
Right.
So let's photograph the early rounds. The final rounds are going to be covered by somebody. The final rounds are always
right.
covered. Let's get out there and cover rounds one, two, three, and as much as I can. But even the first round runner ups, that's what we call them. They're first round runner ups.
Yeah.
They get some coverage, and they love that fact about what I do.
That's awesome. And I tell you, if you're ever going to sell I've heard this from a couple folks who are very clever in the past. If you're going to sell a yearbook or something, you go out there and get pictures of all the first round runner-ups, because those are the guys going to take it and buy 10 of them and send it to their family, right? It's just fantastic. And that's,
right.
I really appreciate what you do there.
Well, I also try to encourage the sportsman racers to think a little bit bigger. Meaning, if you've been covered, whether through me or you or wherever they might be covered, but like more of an editorial, not so much on forums, of course, but more in a real editorial environment. If you've been covered and you have any stickers on that car, then you should be maybe taking a screenshot of your coverage and sending it to the companies that have stickers on your car and say, hey, look, I'm getting something.
Right.
Here I am. I'm getting something. That's the thing that I think a lot of the sportsman racers, they're just not wired that way. John Force is wired that way.
Racers just want to race.
they just want to race, but they could maybe kind of turn it into something a little bit bigger if they just thought along those lines. Some of them do, some of them just don't. But I try to encourage them that if they've been covered, to use that in maybe even a subtle way to turn it into maybe something a little bit bigger.
Yeah, sure. Well, and it feeds the whole ecosystem because then the sponsors are more willing to give out a couple more, reductions in price or a couple more dollars, whatever their support ends up being. But, it's something. And so, and that's why they're doing it. Of course, they're all doing it, most of them, for the love of the sport, too. I would hate to see how many of those guys actually make their money back on some of the contingency stuff. But they're, it's all, everybody's in this thing for love. I think Schumacher and Force are making money. And the NHRA, of course. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, that's true. And Connie can probably fund his entire team out of his back pocket. So,
yeah.
But look, there's no doubt that Connie Coletta loves this sport. He's been in it for so long. So that wasn't a swipe at Connie Coletta at all.
No, he's still, Connie keeps his street cred. All of them kind of do. I mean, you can't look at any of those guys and say that they didn't earn it. The sport went to a place that I kind of feared it would one day. When I was younger, it used to be my thing, right? When I was really a huge fan, I knew all about it, and I said, "Man, if this ever gets as big as NASCAR, I don't know if I'm going to still like it as much." And of course, I guess it didn't quite keep up with NASCAR, but it's more mainstream than it's been, probably in its history. Maybe not, but
one of the best things that I've learned since publishing is it gives me access to some of the pros, and I've gotten to know some of the pros. And what I've learned is many of the pros are just like me. They just want to race. And I'm thinking of Larry Dixon. That man just wants to race. He loves to race. He is a true competitor. He's also an awfully nice guy, Dixon.
Yeah.
He's a super, super, super guy. But what I got to know about Larry is he just wants to race. And just like me, so his platform is much bigger than mine. But at our core, it's not very different. And that's another thing I try to share with my audience, because there seems to be this big divide. We're all siloed. Bracket racers think the pros don't care about them; that they don't understand bracket racing. The pros think that the bracket racers are, needy or whatever the case may be, and then you've got these divisions between, well, I'm Super Street, so Stock Eliminator doesn't understand me, and nobody understands Competition Eliminator at all. the class of the mad scientist. But really, were kind of the same. Even Force, when he lost his sponsorship with Castrol and Ford, was that 4 years ago? Right. Or 3 years ago? I remember I was at Maple Grove, and I said to Larry Dixon, I said, I'm telling you, Force is winning this championship now, because he had just lost, he just made the announcement that he lost his sponsors.
Right.
And I said, you watch, Force is going to win this, the whole thing. And he did. And then he got Peak, he got Chevrolet.
Right.
And again, that's the racer, that John Force, operating on a very different platform. He's a racer. And that man, when you think about this, think of it this way. Connie Coletta, Don Schumacher, and John Force are probably the top three. Would you agree with that?
Sure.
Schumacher makes his money with Schumacher Auto Electric, I believe.
Right.
Connie has his Coletta flying service.
Mm-hmm.
Force built it himself.
Yeah.
Just racing.
Right.
That's pretty amazing that he did that.
It's a hell of a thing. I know people hate him and love him, and you know, you can't not like the guy talking to him one to one. It's so, you know,
I love him.
You can't talk about, you know, the man did it. He got all those kids up there competitive winning, and you know, but what can you say?
Yeah, I am a John Force fan. I have no problem admitting that. But I do like a lot of the newer racers. I think my favorite team right now is Jeff Diehl. The man just does not give up. He's just so inspirational.
They are great. I tell you, it's funny with these. We'll go on a little bit and talk about your racing stuff in a second. It's funny about these new funny cars you bring up. That, you know, the funny thing is they're not just 2 tenths down. You know, these things are so twitchy now, where you're either you're making a good lap or you're blowing the tires off, and it's just a, you know, it's sad to see sometimes guys are out there with 11 second runs not quite getting in because they couldn't get all the runs down. They blew the tires off that many times. It's a difficult thing to do. It's not like it used to be where, you know, it used to be, there's always been a range between the quickest and the slowest guys, but there was always a chance, you know, and these days it's pretty tight.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point from another angle. So when I'm at events, NHRA has given me photo vests for starting line access, but I do like to get up in the stands and shoot from, you know, I just like different angles. I like moving around the track, and I typically shoot finish line for any breakout classes, starting line for any heads-up classes, but I like to get up in the stands. And when one of those funny cars or dragsters blows the tires off and it's basically now a one-horse race, you can hear the dejection in the stands. Like, they're not having a good time with that.
Right.
They
right.
want to see two cars at least somewhat side by side, kind of.
Right, right.
And when one just hazes the tires at the hit of the throttle and the other is just gone, it's palpable in the stand that the wind has just been knocked out of these people. So that's a challenge, because they're kind of thinking, well, what did we just see here? We saw one car go down the track and the other not. So
I totally agree
something.
With you. Well, you're right. Back in the 70s, you know, Prudhomme would be going a 6:30 or something, and the other guy would be going a 6:99 or something. But still, it was a race, right? The guy was making the lap.
Right, right. They might be a car length apart, but they're making the lap. Yeah. And that's something that I know that a lot of sportsman racers and bracket racers like to swipe at NHRA that they don't know what they're doing. They're probably very aware of this, and they just kind of don't know what to do about it. Yeah. Do you limit the cars? Do you take some power away? Do you put them on a single pump and a single mag so that they have a better chance of staying hooked up? I don't know. I don't race those types of cars. So I'm just sort of taking an educated guess as somebody who's been around the sport a long time. But that's an issue. And Maple Grove, the national event at Maple Grove was packed to the gills, which was a great thing to see.
Right.
I mean, it was standing room. They were 10 deep at the fence, and the stands were packed. And I was like, wow, this is great. We need events like this. You know, we need events that are full. So now you've got full stands, and you got people blowing the tires off.
Right.
I hope they come back. I hope they weren't disappointed, but at least they were there.
Yeah. Well, oh my gosh, Bob, we got to have you on 10 more times. We got a lot of topics to cover, man.
Go ahead. Sorry about that. I get derailed when I talk racing.
Well, me too, and that's why we're here, though. Let's talk about that big Dodge Polara, and then I'm going to cut you loose and so John can talk about the other part of your life. But so I was looking way back at Hughes Racing Engine's website. You know, they're bragging on you. Two-time track champ at Long Island Motorsports back way back in 2011. Tell us a little bit about that car.
So, so the Polara, I used to work for a magazine called Guitar World. Mm-hmm. And one of our sister publications was Mopar Action. And The ad director on Mopar Action, a fellow named Dan Gallo, had this 64 Dodge Polara. It was a streetcar. And just a plain black streetcar, full interior. It ran like 13 twos in the quarter mile. And he was selling it. And I've always loved those old B-bodies. Now, the Polara is a little bit larger than, you know, the Belvederes and the Coronets. It's still a B-body, but it's actually a little bit bigger. But I still loved the body style. So I jumped on it, and that was in 1995. I started racing the car competitively in 1997. By this point, it was probably running, I don't know, 1150s. 1998 was the first year that I ever joined any NHRA points program. I won track champion at Long Island Motorsports Park in, at that time, I think it was called Heavy Eliminator, which mm-hmm. is a foot brake. I've always just raced my car in foot brake. Yeah. I will cross it over into Super ET, but I'm still foot braking it. There are no delay boxes in that car at all. And it is still push-button shifted with the original, well, it's not original, but it's a 65 push-button torque flight. So I won track championship 1998, 99, and then 2000. So it was 3 years in a row that I was track champion at Long Island Dragway. And then I started crossing the bridge and racing at ATCO Island Dragway in Englishtown, and I saw that there was a whole different caliber of racer. And I immersed myself in that environment, and I would race two or three times a week, crossing bridges. I lived on Long Island at the time, and I would sometimes race the Tuesday Night Gamblers race at ATCO, and then Saturday night at either Island or ATCO, and then trailer to Englishtown for Sunday and sleep in my car, my truck, outside the gate, and then race at Englishtown. And the tracks were really helpful. They actually would let me leave the car during the week at the track. So I wouldn't have to keep trailering back and forth because they knew that I was such a steady customer, and they were really good, you know, really good to me and very helpful. But it was great. I put a lot of passes on that car, and I've had a lot of success with it. And it's a lot of fun pushing buttons, going down the track. People can't believe I'm still using the push buttons. And it's really an ancient car. I mean, the car is a 64.
Yeah.
It's 53 years old.
Right, and 3,700 pounds plus.
Now it's 3,450 with me, and a full 8 gallon cell. So it's 3,450, and now it's running 1050s, depending on the track. I was just at New Media Dragway running 1070, but with the altitude at New Media, I figure at Englishtown that day it would have been like a low 1050, and it's on a pump. It's a pump gas motor, man. It's not anything expensive. Bracket racing, I try to keep it simple. keep my expenses down.
Sounds awesome.
It seems to work.
Sounds like you got a good handle on that. Something else you got a good handle on is some rocking. Let's turn you over to John Bachelman to talk about that.
Yeah, Bob, we'd like to hear about your music.
So that's my other passion. Music. I've been a drummer for a long time. I play Ludwig drums. I've got three different sets. And when I was in college and couldn't have my drums with me, I bought a Gibson Les Paul and started playing guitar. I mean, I had been messing around with guitar prior to that. I think maybe back as early as high school, but I never owned my own guitar. And I went out and I bought a beautiful black 87 Les Paul Custom.
Wow.
Which I've since had signed. It is signed on the back by Les Paul. whom I met and became somewhat friendly with when I would go to see him at Fat Tuesdays in New York City. This was when I was with Guitar World. And now I've got also a Fender Telecaster replica. It's a knockoff. Couple of Marshall amps, a mandolin, some harmonicas, but I'm really a drummer. And I like heavy stuff, you know, really heavy. I'm playing Starland Ballroom in a few weeks with the band I'm in, Ripped. So that's all heavy original music.
Wow.
And playing a gig with my former band, the band I used to be in until last year, Section 8. We're playing a show the night before Thanksgiving. So now that racing season's winding down, the music starts kind of amping up.
I've heard of Section 8.
Yeah.
I read about y'all.
Yeah, Section 8. So that's not my band. That's actually one guy's band. He's had that band for a long time. And to his credit, all of the music was his. He wrote everything. We just kind of played it. And he encouraged us to give it our own spin. But it's all him. That's talent.
That is. That sure is. I'm in a similar situation here. I play in two bands. Play in the Pee Wee Bowen band, which is soul hits from the 50s and 60s, old time rock and roll and blues, and I'm playing keyboards with Pee Wee. And then the other band that I'm in is the City Kings, and I play guitar in that band, and it's an all original band.
Where are these bands based?
In Houston.
So that's a good music market.
Yes, it is. It's not that easy to find gigs if you're an original band. We're real popular on the benefit circuit, but, you know, going out and getting a club gig, we're guaranteed to work steady with Pee Wee. I've been with him 12 years, and we're playing two gigs coming up this weekend, both private. And Saturday, we played the BioFest in Lamarck, and the mayor of Lamarck proclaimed August the 8th, which is Pee Wee's birthday, Pee Wee Bowen Day in Lamarck forever.
You were there to celebrate it.
Oh yeah, I went over and hugged him.
So you must know then the Texas Music Emporium.
In the what now?
The Texas Music Emporium.
I am familiar with it. But I'm not exactly sure. Is it a venue that a band?
No, it's a retailer. It's a music. It's a music instrument retailer, and it is owned by Jim Capiello, who is a superclass racer from I believe Texas is Division 4. So
yes,
Jim Capiello owns it. So we're all doing the same thing. We're all into rock and roll and hot rods.
Yes, we are.
Familiar with Saldano, are you familiar with Mike Saldano, Saldano Amps?
Yes, I am. They have Saldano Amps here.
Yep, so Mike is a hot rodder. Jim is a racer. He's racing, I believe he's racing Super Gas in Division 4, and he owns Texas Music Emporium. And I've got his sticker on my case of my Les Paul. I know Jim from my Guitar World days.
So we're all into racing and rocking. We loved it so much we named a show after it. We got to cut you loose there, Bob. The time is flying when you're having fun, but we need to get you back on here as soon as we can because it was a blast. And
I'd love to come back on, and I really appreciate the opportunity, and I love what you guys are doing for our sport and for the rocking, too.
Thank you. All right, man. Well, let's hook up. Let's team up. Drag Time News, everybody. Go check it out right now, dragtimenews.com.
Thanks,
Bob,
guys. Have a great night.
Great having you. Bye-bye.
You too, Bob. Thank you.
All right. Let's turn it over to John Bachelman for some JB's take in this week's Racer of the Week. John, take it away.
Thanks, BP. My pick for Racer of the Week is CJ Craig Durbin, a custom car builder and outlaw racer from Kelowna, Illinois. CJ was recommended to me by our friend and former Racer of the Week, Steve Plum. Thanks, Steve. The graphic I made of CJ's feature lit Facebook up like nobody's business. On my page alone, it garnered 131 likes, 15 shares, and 11 positive comments. On the pages it was shared to, there were upwards of 105 more likes applied to this showcase. That brings CJ in second place all time behind Brett Kepner for likes. Congratulations on that, CJ. I've been chatting with him over the last few weeks, and he sent me some info on him and his hot rod. I will read it word for word as a quote. CJ said, "My car addiction and wrench turning started when my dad helped me buy my first car. It was a 91 Camaro with a 305 and a bad transmission. He told me that he would buy the car for me if I put a new transmission in it, and that's how it started. That car broke every single day I drove it, so I learned a lot from it. I've been racing in cruising cars and trucks ever since. Today I mostly focus on turbo, LS, street, and race cars. I've built around 10 LS swap cars for friends around my area. Nothing to make big money on. I just like to see other people out cruising and racing with me. Last year, a buddy and I entered the Holley LS Fest Motor Swap Challenge and won it by a mile. We pulled out a running and driving drivetrain and put in a new motor and transmission in it in just 1 hour and 26 minutes, and we were driving it again. That's one of my biggest accomplishments. My truck is a 1990 Chevy S10 with a 2004 LS 6.0 on 3 7875 mm turbos, a TH400 trans, and a Ford 9-inch rear end. I drive this truck everywhere. Just last Friday, I drove it to the local racetrack, ran a 950 quarter mile at 141 miles an hour, which is my personal best in the truck, and then back home. As far as racing goes, I don't enter a lot of big competitions. I mostly just do a lot of Friday fun nights and some street racing with it. The truck is really too fast for its own good, as for it does not have any safety gear whatsoever. This winter, I plan on adding some safety gear, and it will open up my options on attending more races. I do drive the truck as much as possible to hot rod power tours, streetcar takeovers, and I have even entered it in a rally cross. My goals are to really just drive it to as many events as I possibly can all over to meet and race new people. Now, CJ, it's none of my business, it ain't my truck, and it ain't my life, but if I was you, I'd get the safety gear. We wish you good luck, safe racing, and the best of times in the future. Back to you, BP.
All right, thank you, John, and another great evening tonight. Let's talk about lost friends, folks. We've got quite a list tonight and quite a lot of very famous persons to mention. Paul Dickey, NHRA Tech Inspector, passed away from cancer. Farewell to Paul. On the 21st, George Howard, the father of the million-dollar drag race in bracket racing, and of course, he even had Top Fuel cars down there at his track. Just one of the great guys in drag racing, the guy that did it his way, George Howard, passing away. Here's another name, Rolla Volstead. This was an IndyCar racer, but he raced on the open tracks way back. He was 99 years old, and he's the guy that gave Janet Guthrie her start in IndyCar racing. If you go back to the 70s, there, Janet Guthrie, the first lady to drive an IndyCar at Indianapolis. This was the guy who gave her her start. Rolla Volstead, one of the grand old gentlemen of motor racing, 99 years old. Farewell, sir. Bill Holbrook, another gigantic name, Ford racing engineer, so integral to so many things in NASCAR and drag racing in the early days, the 60s. Father of the Ford Talladega, Bill Holbrook, passing away on the 22nd. Also on the 22nd, Frank Pfeiffer, the 1993 IHRA Top Fuel champion, but he went back racing Top Fuel cars all the way to the 60s. One of the grand old gentlemen of the sport. He's been around forever. Personal friend of our friend Brett Kepner, and proud to have met him and proud to have known him. Frank Pfeiffer, passing away. And then finally, this is tragic, Brett Henry, who crashed his AA fuel altered at the California Hot Rod Reunion. He was from Wichita, Kansas, 50 years old. He succumbed to those injuries at the race over the weekend. So Brent, all to his family and friends, of course, that was the most tragic way to go. The other gentleman, you know, especially the older gentleman, having fantastic lives and such gigantic contributions. But farewell to all, and we're proud to remember all. Let's wrap up the show, folks. We want to thank Bob Buechler, who was just fabulous. I mean, I gotta watch out. This guy's going to take my job. But what a voice and what a memory. John Bachman, of course, Danny White, Jeff and Dustin Gilder, Barb Santucci, and Bud, Mr. Drag News DeBoer, who get us all these great guests. We'll see you next Monday night, folks. Our guest will be Ray Brickhouse, the original U.S. Mail funny car from the East Coast. So looking forward to talking to him. Have a great, great week. And until we see you the next time, adios. I'm going home where it can't get me. Spend all my life trying to be free.